The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
Tonight on Unsigned, we have special guest Brad Wood covering UFC 135. Also, Major League Baseball wild card race, NFL over this past weekend, college football top 25, REM calling it quits, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ballot for 2012, the top movies at the box office, and much, much more, only on Unsigned, happening now. Hey everybody, how's it going out there? Welcome to Unsigned. It's Tuesday night. Hopefully everything is all right with you. My name is Ryan. Again, thanks for joining us this evening. I got a special guest tonight, Mr. Brad Wood, who we'll introduce here in a moment. Hopefully everybody had a great weekend. A lot of sports over the weekend. So, you know, with Major League Baseball, the playoff race. We have, you know, college top 25 in football, and you know, obviously the NFL had a huge weekend. A lot of crazy games. But I want to introduce to you now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, hailing from New York State, Brad the Spartan Wood! Hey, Brad, how's it going, man? Thanks for coming on tonight.
Thanks for having me, Ryan. I appreciate it. How you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing good, man. Hey, as I said, you know, we got a lot of stuff to cover tonight, and I know, you know, You're an MMA fighter, you're training, and we'll get into that a little bit later, but always interested to have a fighter's take on especially boxing and definitely UFC, which we'll get into here in a little bit. But first, I want your take on what happened a couple Saturday nights ago in Vegas at the MGM Grand. You have Floyd Money Mayweather, undefeated, taking out or Victor Ortiz in the fourth round with many have called, not even including myself, have called this as a legal, you know, a legal sucker punch where, you know, Ortiz was deducted a point for a headbutt. The ref did not, and I think this is key, the referee does not make them go to separate corners while deducting the point, and Mayweather throws a left and a right and knocks Ortiz out. What's your take on that?
Yeah. When I seen that, I was a little bit in shock. You know, I have to say that, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, there's a, you know, with the ref's perception of how he called it. Unfortunately, you know, either way you look at it, with Victor throwing the illegal headbutt and Mayweather firing right off the bat, you know, it's up in the air there. You know, I think that, you know, through all four rounds, I think the ref was kind of, you know, not on his, he didn't have his A game going on. I think, you know, both fighters are tough, amazing contenders. Your records, you know, show for that with Mayweather at 42-0 with 26 knockouts. Then you got Ortiz at 29-3-2 with 22 knockouts. You got two gladiators going pound for pound. But, you know, you got to keep your guard up, man. Mayweather did make a very good point. At all times, you got to keep your guard up, even when the ref splits you up. You know, and I think that when he dropped his guard, Mayweather took, possibly he did take advantage of a moment, but he got the win.
Yeah, definitely, you know, a bang-bang scenario for boxing on that stage, a pay-per-view, and what transpired after. We actually have a clip of it here of the post-game where Larry Merchant comes in to do an interview with Floyd Mayweather. Check this out, man.
I want to thank God for the victory. Without God, all this wouldn't be possible. I want to thank my team. I got hit with a dirty shot. And it's protect yourself at all times. I hit him with a left hook, right hand, and that ended the bout.
So you're saying that even though it appeared that he wasn't protecting himself and thought that that was part of the ceremony that you were going through of apology, that you unfairly took advantage of it. What do you say to those who say, what'd you do there? You were winning the fight and in charge.
I just want to tell everybody that bought pay-per-view, that came out to Las Vegas, thank you.
And anyway,
it was a hell of a fight.
You know you're a promoter, but now we're talking to you as a prize fighter. Let's take a look at what happened at the end of the fight.
Oh, let's look
and
at
you
it.
Describe it.
We touch gloves. We back the fight hook. Right hand. And that's all she wrote.
So it for you, it was just an automatic response. Let's get on with the fight.
It's protect yourself at all times. He done something dirty. We're not here to cry and complain about what he did dirty or what I did dirty. I was victorious. If he want a rematch, he can get a rematch.
You were in charge of the fight. You were aggressive and trying and taking advantage of what you saw.
You know what I'm going to do? Because you don't ever give me a face shake. You know that? So I'm going to let you talk to Victor Ortiz, all right? I'm through. They put somebody else up and give me an interview.
What are you talking about?
You never give me a face shake. HBO needs to fire you. You don't know shit about boxing. You ain't shit. You got shit.
I wish I was 50 years younger and I'd kick your ass.
You won't do shit.
Well, there you hear, Fred, Larry Merchant, doing what Larry Merchant's done for years. What's your take on that, man?
Oh, man, right here. This is a sad moment, I think, in any sport period that has to do with, with me personally as a fighter. I find this to be insulting and degrading to the sport on both ends. I mean, on one end, you got Merchant who got the answer to his question. He has for quite some time always gave Mayweather a pretty nasty run. And I think it took it to effect where Mayweather, started, going a little crazy with his mouth, being very vulgar. And, when he started to get a little too nasty, I think it should, it got way out of control. Mayweather had answered this question, he even kind of almost omitted that he hit him with a dirty shot because he said, let's not talk about what he did dirty or what I did dirty. So, somewhere in between, in between the white and black, there's a fine line of gray, but we all probably will never know, but he is right. Victor should take that rematch, hopefully after the Pacquiao, if Mayweather will get into the ring with Pacquiao, which is exciting to even think about. But, Victor should probably take that rematch. And, Victor talked a lot himself after the fight about, how he didn't get a fair shake. Mayweather, he doesn't believe Mayweather truly beat him. And, he got an actual pretty good interview. Opposed to
Mayweather's. Yeah, Larry Merchant has been around a long time, and I alluded last week to this that I thought that maybe Mayweather jumped on him like he did because the Pacquiao question was more than likely next coming from Larry Merchant. Now Pacquiao has a fight in November versus Manuel Marquez, which is not a guaranteed win. This is the third time these guys have fought. Let's assume that Pacquiao wins. By all accounts, he should win his fight in November. Pacquiao, Mayweather, we talked about it a little bit off air. I mean, that's really a marquee matchup, and I think it would be good for boxing.
That is one of the fights that we all wish we could see. Like if we could go back and we could put Ali and Marciano, we could take two people out of their different times, two legends, and stick them in the ring. We got Pacquiao, who is just an absolute pounder. This man could just take a beating like no other boxer I've seen and just keep coming at you with a smile and keep throwing loads and loads of punches and just produce a lot of damage. And then you have Mayweather, who is just an absolute precision artist. He is technical, he is fast, he is agile, he has absolutely got all the tools. I mean, and his record speaks for himself on that level, but so does Pacquiao's. I think that right there will be the measure of Mayweather's ability to keep that title of being, the overall all-around pound-for-pound champion of the world.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think it would be good for boxing. Whether it happens or not remains to be seen. Of course, Pacquiao has to win his fight in November to really set this thing up. And, I mean, we know the money is going to be there. Let's be honest. The money will be there for these two to get in the ring. Whether it happens or not remains to be seen. Now, Brad, moving on tonight, again, everyone, thanks for joining us. We have Brad the Spartan Wood from New York State joining us this evening. Now, I want to talk about UFC 135. Heading to Denver, Colorado in that thin air, 18 years, almost to the day, really, since they really UFC crowned its very first champion ever in UFC, and then they head back to Colorado. A lot of big fights. One fight I want to talk about is the Matt Hughes fight. His intended opponent, Diego Sanchez, had a broken hand, could not fight. So he ends up with a different opponent and then gets knocked out. What is your take on Matt Hughes? I think he even alluded, and Matt White alluded to, basically, I don't know if you're ever going to see Matt Hughes fight again, a legend in the sport at 37 years old. Where do you see him stacking up with other legends in UFC over the last 18, almost 20 years now, compared to some of the younger guys that we have right now?
Man, let me tell you, I say this with a heavy heart. I when I started a long time ago, I was a very, me and you both, we did have a chance to speak about this off radio too. And Matt Hughes actually was a very big inspiration to me in mixed martial arts, about 5 to 7 years ago. And, I think what happened was, Matt trains in Elevation. That's almost the same as Colorado. So, there was no disadvantage for Matt there. And he came in with an onslaught of legends right along with him in his corner. But I think the problem is that Josh Koscheck, when he made the remark about Matt Hughes being too old, being an old man, I think people took that out of context. I think he was trying to say that he was too old. He was too old to be in the sport from how long he's been in it. And unfortunately, that fight after Koscheck had taken such a beating from GSP, and I don't think any of us really expected him to even come back into the sport after the beating he took. 90 days in the hospital is a long time to take after a fight. And, the Elevation for him was incredible. That put him at a major disadvantage. Plus, the lack of heart that was probably stripped from him after the beating he took from GSP was probably very hard for him, too. So I think when they got in there and he took out Matt Hughes, and I do believe the fight was, it was called 4:59 with 1 second left in the first round. Matt Hughes took a knockout punch. That was a sad moment because that, to me, personally, I believe ended Matt Hughes' career. I mean, even Matt Hughes said himself that, he's going to tell Dana White to put him back up on the shelf. But, and I would like to put this out there, that Matt Hughes, just like, another great I want to throw out there, Randy Couture. We've seen Randy Couture now come out of retirement, seven times? Okay?
Yeah,
he's been on the shelf. He's been in and off the shelf about 6-7 times, and he's proven that he can, any person at 40, 45, 46 years old can come back out and be a legend. So I think there's still hope for Matt Hughes.
Yeah, I think if the right fight presents itself, I think you'll see him back. Now, Koscheck, when he fought George St. Pierre, I think it was last October, he had a bone shattered under his eye, which took, forever to heal. And he did not show any rust. I mean, he looked, Amy's not, the most skilled fighter that you're going to see at that weight class, but he looked pretty solid this past weekend.
He did. He looked a lot more impressive than I'm used to seeing him. He it seems like he's kind of got a little bit of he's got a little wind back underneath him. And, but I tell you though, Ryan, the one thing that I find a little bit laughable is that though, no matter how hard, no matter how much better Josh increases his skill, he is only going to find himself back at the same man that put him in the hospital for 90 days. I don't know how exciting that is for Josh Koscheck to know that if he does keep on winning and he's successful, he'll be heading back to the same man that almost put him out of the sport. So, I'm proud of the guy for his win. He took out a legend, and there's nothing you can ever take away from Matt Hughes, and Josh Koscheck did his thing. So I'm very, very proud of both those guys, and I hope to see Matt Hughes in the future, and I hope to see Koscheck get his second chance to, attempt to take out GSP.
Yeah, I don't know if a fight with George St. Pierre is next for him. He may want to try to sneak in, maybe another fight or two in before thinking about getting in the ring with George St. Pierre, but... You never know with UFC and Dana White. You never know what can happen there.
No, sir, you don't. That is a definite fact. But you're right. I definitely think he should kind of take it a little bit slow and get a couple of more fights under his belt before he decides to take on that Tyrannosaurus Rex of a man.
Yeah, no doubt there. Now, the other bouts on UFC 135 I want to talk about. Now, Travis Brown in the heavyweight. About in heavyweight division, 6'7", this guy is a monster. Gets a unanimous decision over Rob Broughton. I don't know a whole lot about Travis Brown. What do you think about the heavyweight division? This guy, 6'7", he's a big dude.
Oh gosh, yeah, those are some huge guys, man. I mean, let me tell you, I'm glad I'm not in that weight division. These guys definitely get down, but the problem is that, and even big fighters will say, big guys gas quick, and it's not their fault. It's not their cardio. They train hard. They put it down like any other MMA fighter. And it's just that, and I've seen a lot of big guys also though have a lot of good cardio that they can push themselves. We all do. We push the limits, but it is a gas situation, and people, if you don't have the cardio, out first is the one who usually gets pounded out. Now, with this unanimous decision, it was 30-27 all the way across the board. It was a great call. It was a great fight, but it definitely was one-sided. You got to give Brown some credit for the work he put in, because he earned that win.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Now, another heavyweight fight, and this one even it was way more one-sided than the Travis Brown fight, and that was Mark Hunt bloodying Ben Rothwell in the second round, and really an overwhelming win, which more than likely should have been stopped by the referee.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Now, this is definitely a topic that I'd like to have a little conversation on. This is one, again, where I would say that this is a very terrible, terrible referee that was in that ring. That fight should have been stopped after the man had to be picked up by his own corner off the ground. He had no idea where he was. I give that man the most respect I could possibly give any fighter for the courage to continuously keep walking out with nothing left, and to keep just getting hammered and hammered and hammered. And I'm just shocked that even on a stand-up, the man was knocked out on his feet, and the ref still wasn't calling that fight. When he got down, he was getting pounded on the ground, and he wasn't defending himself. The ref wasn't stopping that fight. Every time that they got into a position where a submission was to take place, or they even got to the ground after pounding each other for so long, the ref would just stand them back up, knowing that Rothwell couldn't defend himself properly. I mean, this was just bad. This was bad all the way around for a referee, man. You know, they definitely had the wrong ref in there. And in my personal opinion, that referee should be ejected from the game because he's going to get somebody killed.
Yo, I agree. And I'm glad you decided to talk about this because I've seen some fights where the ref is quick to really make a judgment where it not necessarily is in the right. And then you see the other side of it where, you know, like everybody in the whole arena can see this guy is obviously knocked down on his feet. And his corner's in there scraping him off the mat. I mean, at what point does Rothwell's corner say, you know what, enough's enough. We got to protect our fighter here. And what point does that happen in a corner? You know, and it's amazing how the degree of how referees can be so one-sided sometimes, where you know what, they're not stopping a fight that's going to end however it ends, and you have other refs that are so quick to jump in and really cut this thing off when it really shouldn't be. And this is a case, obviously, that should have been stopped before it really got to the point that it did. And Rothwell, he was a bloody mess at the end of this fight. I mean, you know, credit Mark Hunt for coming with a good game, but...
Yeah, it was. It was a shame to see that happen. You know, it was definitely a shame to watch that go down. But at the same time, you know, I can tell you exactly why it happens. Most referees stop fights fast. You know, when it does get stopped fast, it's because you have lower caliber fighters, and they're, you know, people want to see, like, when they let it go that long and you see it go that long, I would expect to see that in a five-minute championship round, you know, championship fight. I would like to see that. You know, I'd like to see them let it go with Anderson Silva, but I would never want to see any fighter in Rothwell's position to be allowed to be continuously pounded on and pounded on and pounded on without anyone stepping in to say, hey, look, wait a minute, you know, this guy. And I'll tell you another thing, for the corner. The corner should have known that it was time to stop the fight when they had to carry their man back to the corner.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, that's exactly what they should have known.
I agree, and I think as a corner person, you know, you have to. I mean, you're going to know your fighter better than the referee. Obviously, is going to know, and you got to know if your fighter is out on his feet, whether he wants, whether he's telling you, "I'm going back out there to fight" or not. Sometimes you have to be like, you know what, discretion is the better part of valor. Sorry for the cliche, but in this case, it may as well have been. Could have maybe saved Rothwell. Who knows what kind of injury he has at this point? I haven't read an update, but it could have been a lot worse. I believe he's going to recover and be fine, but could have been a lot worse. Fortunately, it was not, a dire situation. Now, Brad, moving on, we have the light heavyweight Tony Ferguson, who landed might have landed one of the heaviest punches of the night, landing an uppercut that broke the jaw of Aaron Riley in a lightweight division. Tony Ferguson, up and comer, man.
Yes, he is. He is definitely someone to look out for. And when he defeated Aaron Riley, and it was 5 minutes in the first round. I mean, on the buzzer, he knocked that. It's like right on the bell, right on the button. That man went out. And he's definitely somebody to look out for in the game. You know, that was official. It was legit. He walked out, did his thing. Boom, bam. They had a good. They sized each other up. You know, Ferguson saw his. He saw his in. He took it. Riley went out.
Yeah. Now, kind of a coming out party, really, for Ferguson. Who do you see him? Where do you see him going next in this division? Who is really his competition, you think, at this point?
That's a tough call. You know, there's a lot of tough contenders out there right now. You know, there's a lot of good contenders out there. I'd like to see him take on, you know, some high caliber fighters, you know, such maybe I don't know, man. I know he's not ready to step up to the plate with John or Sugar or anybody else like that. But I'd like to see him take on maybe a I don't know, man. Honestly, I'm open to anybody he takes on. I just like to see him get a little more, you know, a little more work under his belt, you know, and see where he progresses from there. You know, I can't really call people because they're, you know, I really don't really see him, you know, established completely yet.
You know, another guy who had a fight at UFC, and I was just thinking about this. I think this would be an intriguing matchup to see who really takes the next step. Is him and Ferguson versus Diaz? Do you think that could possibly be on the docket here in, you know, say a couple months?
Absolutely. If I had to pick anybody, that's a great call, Ryan, because, you know, Diaz would be a great fight for Ferguson to prove himself that you know, he's definitely a main contender and that he could possibly, you know, work his way right enough to take a title shot. You know, that would be an impressive victory if he could take the win over Diaz.
Very nice. Now, heading to the main event, UFC 135, and I said, you know, 18 years really after crowning its first champion, the stage is set at the Pepsi Center in Denver. 24-year-old John's Bones Jones. The guy is quick as lightning, very, very skilled fighter for his age, taking on Quentin Rampage Jackson. And Jones, really impressive, really controlled the fight, dictated the pace, and gets Rampage Jackson to tap out in the fourth round, the very first tap out submission of Jackson's career since joining UFC. What more can you say about John's Bones Jones, man? I mean, unbelievable.
A lot. Dude, I don't think we have enough time in the show for that. John Bones Jones, man. Wow. I mean, like you said before, I don't want to sound cliche, but if I just like to quote Brandon Vera, my God, the second coming of Jesus Christ. I mean, this man is a vicious. He is one of the most technical, amazing fighters I've ever seen touch the sport. For his age, his experience is just extraordinary. His personality outside the ring is fantastic. You know, he's an amazing human being. He's got the right attitude to be the people's champion. There's truckloads to say about him in and outside the ring. Inside the ring, on this occasion, I have to say this man showed more technicality, more skill than I've seen any other champion in the 205 division ever show. He picked Rampage apart at will. At one point in time, we all seen it. He dropped his guard, stood right in front of Rampage's face, like, you know, saying hello to him, and he could have reached out and kissed him on the nose, man. And when he got him down, it was a simple case of Rampage. He looked great. You know, can't take nothing away from him. He couldn't get in. You know, he just couldn't get in. That was a problem that he was having. And, you know, when you got a guy with an 86-inch reach, you know, you're gonna run into that problem. You know, John Bones Jones is the longest reach in mixed martial arts. You know, and a lot of people, you know, take that for granted, and they think, well, oh, we're just going to cut off, you know, his reach. And the problem is that a lot of people don't know that John is one heck of a clinch fighter, man. And we all seen that with Rampage Jackson. You know, Rampage got in there, found out that in all aspects of the game, he was getting beat. The side kicks he was throwing, the spinning back kick he threw was absolutely amazing. I was so impressed with it. Even though it didn't even land, I was so impressed that he threw that spinning back kick. That's something that's rarely seen in mixed martial arts.
Well, especially, you know, a back kick like that kind of opened you up a little bit to a fighter like Rampage Jackson. I mean, for him to throw that and really not, you know, get countered or put himself in a situation to allow Rampage to get inside of him, which is where that's his bread and butter right there. You can ask Chuck Liddell about that one, you know. So I mean,
yeah, and a lot of others at that too. What I found would be a good lesson here, though, also was that Quentin Rampage Jackson, you know, did an amazing thing, I believe, you know, and he brought honor to the sport afterwards when he had recantered and he went back and he took back the things that he said about John not being, you know, educated in the ring and not having the experience and the skill, and saying that anybody that's stepping up to the plate next against him, he feels sorry for, you know. Watch out for. And I tell you, you know, on the take with that, with Sugar Rashad coming up, I'm feeling bad for Sugar.
Yeah, Rashad Evans, a guy who knows Jones very well. They've trained together. So I think Jones is going to be itching to, you know, to prove to Evans that he is the real deal. And at 24 years old, man, I mean, to be that skilled and that confident in the ring and that well-rounded at such a young age as a fighter is really astonishing. Usually it takes guys a long time to be that skilled and be that much of a technician. I mean, and John Jones, I mean, is, you know, unbelievably skilled. And
that's the toughest weight class that there is, too.
Yeah, and as good as he is in the ring, he's as good as person. We've done stories on the show, and I've talked to you about, you know, some of the stories we've done, and we've shared a little bit back and forth that, you know, I mean, you know, arresting, you know, yeah, he arrested a guy, and you shared a story about how, you know, he didn't just, you know, grab the guy and hold him until police came. He talked with the guy and tried to point him in the right direction.
Right.
You know, the woman down in Florida at a hotel, he just gives the woman some money to help her and her son, doesn't know them from anywhere. Just, you know, things that this guy has done outside of the ring and inside of the ring is great to see athletes do. I don't think enough athletes at this level do enough of that.
I believe, yeah, it's awesome because it breaks the mold of the stereotype of the everyday fighter. You know, people think that mixed martial artists, boxers, wrestlers, you know, meatheads, guys that just want to, you know, we want to fight, we're brutalists. Not, you know, it's like we're not brutalists, we're martial artists. There's a big difference between it, you know. And don't get me wrong, we do get brutal when we get inside that ring, but it is an art form. It's something that, you know, that we actually hold kind of dear. And we do it also for a spectator. It is a spectator sport, though. And none of us ever forget that. And you got to keep the fans, you know, going. You got to keep the fans happy. John Jones knows all that inside and outside the ring, you know. And I just honestly say, at 23 years old and me being 32, you know, I look up to John Jones as a fighter. I think he is an absolutely wonderful human being, great fighter, and I'm guessing he's not losing his crown for quite some time. You know, but Rampage Jackson, I do want to give a lot of credit to, and I do want to, you know, say that, you know, that's one of the first times I've seen him humble himself to actually openly admitting when he was wrong. You know, sometimes it takes somebody popping in the mouth to get you to do that.
Yeah, no, a humble Rampage Jackson is something I would never thought I would hear after a fight, and we definitely heard that this past weekend. Hey, Brad, good stuff, man, talking about UFC. Now, you know, as I alluded to earlier, you are a fighter as well. You've been in the business for a while. If people were interested listening here, interested in seeing you fight, what are some upcoming fights you have coming up here in the next couple months?
Well, just coming up here, I'm fighting in Cage Combat, and it's right outside of New Jersey, and I'm going to be fighting in the 155 division against a man called Ryan DeSalis, and that's going to be scheduled for November 5th. And that's anybody wants to come watch that one hour of a fight, please get your tickets now, and you know, contact me via Facebook or any other way you want to get a hold of me for information.
Okay. Oh, great, man. Well, hey, how about this? After, you win your fight in November, how about you come back, man?
I would absolutely love that. I've had a great time. I love the show. I'm a big fan, Ryan. You're an amazing host, man. I appreciate you having me on here. You know, this definitely been a great, great topics.
Wonderful. Hey, everyone, this is Unsigned. My name is Ryan. That is Brad the Spartan Wood, the Unsigned Clap and I. Thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate it. Good luck in November,
thank you.
Man.
God bless. God bless.
Everybody, that was Brad the Spartan Wood here on Unsigned. Very good stuff. The guy really knows the sport, really knows the fight game, UFC, boxing, all the way top to bottom. Really good energy guy. Glad to have a person like of that character on the show. Always a pleasure. Moving on tonight here on Unsigned. Thanks for hanging out with us, by the way. I hope you're having as much fun as I am. Let's get into NFL, man. My goodness. I mean, the weekend, a crazy weekend. By the way, I went 9-7 on my picks this week. My buddy Sean will be back next week. We'll do our picks. He ended up faring a little better than I did. But let's break down the games for you here. You have the Detroit Lions taking on the Minnesota Vikings. Minnesota. The Vikings, I tell you, this is the Minnesota Vikings blow a double-digit lead for the third time in as many games this season. Two of those games are on their own field. They blow a 20-0 lead against division rival Detroit in their own building. Lions are 3-0. Believe it or not, folks, they look like a playoff contender. I'm telling you right now, the Detroit Lions look for real. I didn't think Matthew Stafford would be as good as he is. And I guess it can't hurt that you're throwing to Calvin Johnson, who is unbelievable as a wide receiver. I don't think people really realize how good this kid really was because he played on those bad Detroit teams for the last 4 or 5 years. Calvin Johnson is unbelievable as a wide receiver, and it's almost uncoverable. He had some catches in that game were ridiculous. Now, the Vikings, on the other hand, 0-3. If they could play 60 minutes of football, they look like a good team. They would play only, unfortunately, they play 30 minutes. So someone needs to let Minnesota know that the games are 60 minutes, not 30. And I think they'll be okay. It'll be a long season for Donovan McNabb and company. Now, here's another game. I said it was going to be an ugly game, and it definitely was. It's the Denver Broncos coming to Nashville to play the Titans this past weekend. And the Titans find a way to win. Matt Hasselbeck, Sean said it last week. Matt Hasselbeck didn't lose at home when he was in Seattle. He doesn't lose. He hasn't lost a home game since being in Tennessee and looks really good. Kyle Orton literally throws the game away, throws an interception late to help steal the win for the Titans. Big news for the Titans, they lose budding wide receiver Kenny Britt, who tore his ACL and MCL, done for the season. That really does hurt them, and Chris Johnson still has done nothing after getting that big-time payday from the offseason of over $50 million. Still has not had a breakout game. They go to Cleveland this weekend. We'll get into that a little bit. And here's another. This is ugly game two of the weekend. This was also a very ugly game, and we knew it would be. The 49ers traveling to Cincinnati. The first time San Francisco travels, you know, it was a hard-fought win to beat the Bengals. Rookie Kendall Hunter of the 49ers scores the only touchdown in the game. The 49ers are now 2-1, and they beat Cincinnati in Cincinnati 13-8. You know, the 49ers are only a fourth-quarter meltdown away from being 3-0. Now, key for the 49ers here, Frank Gore does have an ankle injury, so look for rookie Kendall Hunter, who went to Oklahoma State. Look for him to get more carries as the season goes on. That would be very crucial. He's a different type of runner. He's a little bit smaller, faster, can really hit the hole fast. He looked really good there Sunday in Cincinnati. This game, the Saints playing the Texans. The Texans looking to go 3-0 for the first time in franchise history since joining the NFL. Traveling down to New Orleans to take on the Saints. And they added Wade Phillips as defensive coordinator, was supposed to stiffen up that defense. Well, the Saints, Drew Brees, 370 yards passing, puts 40 points on the board. And they come back from behind and beat the Texans in New Orleans 40-33. The Saints proved the 2-1. The Texans look good. I think that, you know, when they get Arian Foster back, they get more balance on offense. But my question is, can they stop anybody on defense? That's going to be that. Who's going to answer the call on that defense for Houston? That's what it's going to come down to. I think they can win the division they're in. The Colts are bad. Jaguars are bad. Tennessee is so-so. If Texans can't win the division this year, I don't know when they're going to win it. Now, here we go. Giants-Eagles. Michael Vick. Michael Vick.
Is it coming to Indianapolis without Peyton Manning?
Wrong clip. Dang it.
I want to thank God for the victory.
It's 29-16. How about Michael Vick complaining about the hits?
Every time I throw the ball, I'm on the ground. Getting hit in the head. And, you know, I don't know why I don't get the 15-yard flags like everybody else do. But, hey, I'm not going to complain about it. I'm just making everybody aware of it.
He's just making us aware of it. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Vick. Appreciate that. You know what? It's funny, and he's taken a lot of ribbing by the mothership ESPN about this. But you know what? To Michael Vick's credit, he does get hurt in this game again. Hurts his hand. I think he was concussed last week in Atlanta, and I think he may have, you know, been concussed again in this game. He did take some shots to the head, but here's things I thought about the Philadelphia Eagles that really came to fruition when the Giants come to town this past weekend. One, it exposed the Eagles' offensive line and their pass protection, which is awful. Second thing is the front seven of the Eagles against large running backs, they can't stop the run. The Eagles are in trouble there. Even in the secondary, they had issues, even with all those talented cornerbacks they have, Nnamdi Asamoah, Asante Samuels, and company, did not look very good on defense at all. LeSean McCoy for the Eagles is unbelievable. Pass protection on Michael Vick is horrendous. The Giants go to Philly and get their first win in Philadelphia since 2008. 29-16. Eli Manning has a very solid game. 254 yards passing, zero fumbles, zero interceptions. That's very key. Manning's had issues in the past couple years with turnovers. No turnovers at all in Philly, and they get to win. Now, as far as Michael Vick calling out the referees, you know, doing their job and not throwing flags. I went back and watched some of the footage of this game. Michael Vick does take a couple shots to the head, and if it would have been Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, anybody else, you're looking at a 15-yard advancement and a first down. Michael Vick does not get those calls. I don't think him going about it in the media, attacking the refs post-game is the right way to go. I don't think that's the way to go at all. I think what he needs to do is sit down with Andy Reid, the coach in Philadelphia, say, hey, these things happen. Let's send the game film to the NFL and make a formal complaint about it. That's how you go about it. You don't address it in the media. You take it to your coaches, and you take that film and let your coaches go to NFL officials and say, hey, look, this is the rule as it's written here. Why aren't these things called on our star quarterback? And then at that point, maybe you see it handled a little bit differently. I think, you know, Michael Vick coming out and, you know, kind of apologizing and backtracking a little bit today helps, but he's got to know in situations that he's been in over the years in Atlanta and, you know, the dogfighting thing and, you know, list goes on and on. He has to know not to address the media in that way. Obviously, a show of frustration in Philadelphia, Michael Vick. Moving on here in the NFL news, the Cleveland Browns taking on the Miami Dolphins. Peyton Hillis did not play Sunday. So automatically you think, oh man, no Peyton Hillis. The Browns are in trouble playing the Dolphins. Aha, not so fast. Second-year running back Montario Hardesty steps up and really fills in very nicely in the second half, some timely runs. The Browns' defense getting underrated and getting understated, and in my opinion. The Browns' defense is leading the AFC. I said the Browns' defense is leading the AFC in sacks on the quarterback. 11 sacks already in three games, led by rookie Jabal Sheard out of Pittsburgh, DeQuell Jackson, Phil Taylor, Atana Rubin. Again, 11 sacks in three games, the most in the AFC. That's very key. Browns defense keeps them around and keeps it close. Bend, don't break mentality, forcing field goals, you know, and really forcing Miami to not advance for what could have been a game-winning field goal. And credit Colt McCoy for hanging in there, being a winner, and leading drive the last, you know, couple minutes of the game with 40-some-odd seconds left on the clock, throwing a touchdown pass to Muhammad Massaqua. Browns win. They are 2-1. They host the Texans this week. Jacksonville, Carolina. Cam Newton gets his first win as a pro in a downpour in Jacksonville. This was a monsoon in the first half. Again, Cameron Newton getting his first win. Not big numbers like you saw in the first 2 weeks, but the big keys to this win. No fumbles, no interceptions. Panthers win 16-10 in Jacksonville. A game that we all thought was going to be a shootout, and it definitely was. Just the outcome was a little bit different than everyone thought. The Buffalo Bills starting 3-0. The first time in a long time in the top of the AFC North. Buffalo Bills 34-31. That saw a Tom Brady throw four interceptions in this game. The Bills win a game-winning field goal. The Pats defense, as Bart Scott would say from the Jets, they couldn't stop a nosebleed. Patriots defense does not look good, and the Bills look real tough, scoring more points than anybody in the NFL thus far, averaging 38 points a game. Wow. Buffalo looking good. The Rams hosting the Baltimore Ravens. After a big letdown in week two, the Ravens head to St. Louis, and they jump all over the Rams. 37-7, 389 yards by Cool Joe Flacco. Ray Rice runs all over the field, and rookie Torrey Smith, wide receiver, gets a few touchdown catches. The Ravens defense shows no signs of slowing up. Ray Lewis and company were all over the field. Sam Bradford had a rough day. Wow. Not a very good start for the Rams. I mean, a team that was under 500 last year, their first three games, they get the Eagles, Giants, and Ravens. Ouch. That is a rough schedule for any team, let alone a team that was under 500 the season before. The Ravens look very tough. The Chargers and the Chiefs, everyone, you know, including myself, thought that this would really be a blowout. And the Chiefs are horror-awful. That's horrible and awful together. The horror-awful. They just, I mean, this team could not find a way to win, even though San Diego gave them every opportunity to win the game. They could not win. They come up short 20-17 in San Diego. They're horror-awful. That's horrible and awful together. The Jets and the Raiders. Raiders with a big letdown in Buffalo the week before, losing a 21-point lead, taking on the Jets. We thought it would be a slugfest, and the Jets pride themselves on being the bully. Well, I'll tell you what, the Raiders bullied the Jets, putting big-time rushing numbers. Darren McFadden, 171 yards rushing on the ground against Rex Ryan's defense. The black hole swallows up the Jets' front seven and the Raiders show some poise. They don't make the crucial mistakes that cost them the game. They win it convincing fashion, 34-24, the Raiders. Falcons, Buccaneers. I had the Falcons in this game against my better judgment. I wanted to pick the Buccaneers. Have I mentioned how much I really like Tampa Bay's team? This team is very, very good, and they've showed that they are a very physical team. One thing I learned about watching some of this game was this. Tampa Bay and Josh Freeman with the running back LeGarrette Blount, that combination is brutal. That Josh Freeman is a very dynamic player running and passing. When they run the ball with LeGarrette Blount and do play action, they are tough to beat. The other thing I learned about this is the Atlanta Falcons are not physical enough. Matt Ryan was beat up, sacked. He's been sacked almost as much in the first three games as he was all last year. They have issues on the offensive line. I think the Falcons need to get back to being physical like they were last year. That led to a 14-2 record. Run the football with Michael Turner. Yes, you have Roddy White, and you traded all those picks to Cleveland for Julio Jones. You got to get back to what you really are, and that's run the ball with Michael Turner, play action pass, and then get Roddy White and Julio Jones out on the outside. The Falcons do not look like a physical team that we saw last year, and I think are in jeopardy possibly of not making the playoffs. Snap judgment at this point, only 3 weeks in, but what I saw against our rival Tampa Bay, they got out-muscled and out-worked in that game. Tampa Bay prevails. Packers, Bears, a classic division rival. You know, Aaron Rodgers, what can you say? I mean, this guy was all over the field, throwing touchdown passes. Now, here's the thing in this game. The Bears, down 10 at home, pull off one of the most ridiculous plays that never even counted, okay? They end up a punt. Packers are punting. There's about a minute or so left in the game. Devin Hester, punt returner for the Bears, acts like he's going to catch the ball when, in fact, it's actually not even going to him. It ends up on Earl Bennett, a wide receiver for the Bears, ends up in his hands. He takes it all the way and scores a touchdown, which at that point would have, after an extra point, would have made it only a 3-point lead with about a minute left to go. So the Bears would have had to try an onside kick. A lot of things would have had to happen. A phantom flag comes on the field. It gets called back for a hold that was not caught on film anywhere. Therefore, Packers win 27-17. Packers tight end JerMichael Finley catches three touchdown passes from Aaron Rodgers, the first Packer to catch three touchdowns in a game since Tom Jackson did it in 1996. Cardinals, Seahawks. The 12th man in Seattle always plays a crucial part. I thought the Cardinals would win this game. They did not look very solid. No Beanie Wells. The running game is stagnant in Arizona, and the Seahawks come up with a win 13-10. Now, you have the Sunday night game on NBC, Colts taking on the Steelers. Everyone's like, oh, man, no Peyton Manning?
Is it coming to Indianapolis without Peyton Manning? First time since 1997 they've been without Peyton and without Manning.
Is it only because they had Peyton Manning on their team?
You know, when Peyton Manning is on the field, and Al, aside from Peyton Manning.
Peyton Manning is here. He's up in the coach's booth, which was the case and has been the case with Manning through all those years. So almost all of them from Peyton.
Only a handful of guys can do what Peyton Manning can do. You know, Peyton and I have done this so long, comes with experience that he had with Peyton Manning.
Peyton, the number one pick in 98, started as a rookie.
He's been pretty incredible under Peyton Manning in the red zone. This whole transition without Peyton Manning, Kerry Collins doing his Peyton Manning imitation there.
Despite the absence, as you know, of Peyton Manning.
Could have brought in Peyton Manning. Tell me why Peyton Manning can't talk to anybody up there. Now, if Peyton Manning's in the game.
Quarterback's coach and Peyton Manning, of course.
And when you back up Peyton Manning, you don't play very much.
We saw how Peyton Manning was down there on the field with the quarterbacks.
That they weren't just Peyton Manning. Essentially give up on trying to come after Peyton Manning. With Peyton Manning, all those years, he takes every snap.
Peyton Manning. 26 times Peyton Manning was mentioned throughout the game broadcast on NBC Sunday night. Yes, Peyton Manning is out. He had a neck surgery. He's going to be out for the season. My goodness. Really? Peyton Manning. There was a game played Sunday night, and Peyton Manning was not a part of that game. The Colts, despite not having Peyton Manning, by the way, in case you didn't know, I love that montage, man. That's classic. Peyton Manning. Anyway, Colts, a valiant effort by the Indianapolis Colts. Dwight Freeney, defensive end for the Colts, did about everything he could to beat the Steelers himself. That guy was unbelievable. He was everywhere. And then he almost did beat him. Curtis Painter comes in with his long, curly, blonde locks. Peyton Manning's back. Everyone's like, oh, that's what he looks like. Huh. Okay. Ends up leading a drive that ties the game 20-all late in the fourth quarter. But Ben Roethlisberger left a little too much time on the clock. Ben Roethlisberger with another fourth quarter comeback leads the Steelers down. They kick a field goal in the last couple seconds, and they win the game. But I tell you what, the Steelers do not look like a good football team. It looks like, you know, a little, you know, lose the expression, a little long in the tooth. And they're one of the oldest teams in the league, and I think they're starting to show a little wear and tear, and they have major issues. Major issues on the offensive line in Pittsburgh. They're down to their last five linemen. They have some guys on the IR. I mean, I saw Dwight Freeney play against Joe Thomas a couple weeks ago in Cleveland. He did nothing in that game. And Dwight Freeney was manhandling the linemen in Pittsburgh, literally grabbing them and throwing them to the ground like they were a sack of potatoes. There are major issues in Pittsburgh as far as not only defensively, they gave up a lot of running yards again this weekend, but also I think pass protection-wise, much like they had last year. I don't think this is the same Steelers we've come to see in recent years. Remains to be seen, only 3 weeks in. We'll see what happens later in the year, but the Steelers do not look like a solid football team. Monday night, field goals are us, is what Monday Night Football was last night. Monday night, Tony Romo, you know, playing with a Kevlar vest on because he busted up his ribs in San Francisco a week ago. In a field goal battle in Dallas, the final score 18-16. The Redskins get bad Rex Grossman. He throws an interception. He fumbles late in the fourth quarter when they were driving down to kick what else? A field goal to try to win the game. The Cowboys, they win ugly. How about them Cowboys? And I tell you what, the center for the Cowboys had four bad snaps. You know, if you're an offensive lineman, you're playing Monday Night Football and you're trending on Twitter, you know, you had probably one of the worst games an offensive lineman can possibly have. This guy was chucking the ball between his legs all over the field. Credit Tony Romo for chasing him down and making plays out of them. Now, everyone's saying, oh, Tony Romo came of age and blah, blah, blah. Look, Tony Romo had a very gutty effort last night with the busted of ribs. He played a heck of a ball game. I'm not ready to put him in the Hall of Fame yet, okay? There's still a 2-1 team that snuck away, you know, a win in New York opening weekend, and they still snuck a win away in the against the 49ers. So, I mean, when you look at it, I think that, you know, there's got to have some levity there. I don't think the Cowboys are as good as everyone would like to think that they are. There are still major issues there in Dallas. Offensive line being included, much like Pittsburgh, they have issues on offensive line, just like Philadelphia has issues as well. You look at these teams that we put in the higher tier, and you look at them and you go, oh, offensive line, bad. Philadelphia, offensive line, not good. Atlanta, offensive line, not good. You know, so, I mean, there are some teams that, you know, are projected to really to be playoff contenders or even Super Bowl contenders that have major issues on the offensive line heading into week four. Remains to be seen how those issues are resolved or if you can resolve them at this point in the season or not. So far, Pigskin Pick'em-wise in 3 weeks of football, I'm 27-19 going into this week. Here's this week's games. I'll give them to you now. They have Steelers heading to Houston. I'm taking the Houston Texans at home in this in a shootout. I think that even though their defense can't stop anybody, I think their offense with Schaub and Johnson is one of the best in the league. The Panthers heading to Chicago to take on the Bears. I think Cam Newton's going to have a rough day with that Bears cover two scheme. I think the Bears are going to win that game. Redskins and the Rams. I think the Rams finally get in the win column. They beat the Redskins at home. 49ers at Philadelphia taking on the Eagles. I think even if there is no Mike Vick, I'm taking the Eagles in this one. I think the Eagles will be in a bad mood after losing their division rival Giants last week. Titans taking on the Browns in Cleveland. I think the Browns defense, call me a homer if you want. I'm a Browns fan. Everybody knows that. I've been doing the show for a while. Call me a homer. No, I think the Browns defense will keep it close. And if Hillis plays, I think that Tennessee defense is suspect to give up some yards on the ground. Vikings, Chiefs, two teams that haven't won a single game all year. Somebody's bound to win it. I think the Vikings finally put together 60 minutes, and the Chiefs stay winless. Lions heading to Dallas, heading to Big D to take on those Cowboys. You know what? I'm taking the Lions. They're 3-0 for the first time since 1980, and I think they're going to go 4-0 this weekend. Buffalo coming to Cincinnati. Bad news for Cincinnati. They're banged up. Cedric Benson might be suspended for that game. I think the Bills run, pass, score 40 on them. It's an ugly game in Cincinnati this weekend. Saints and Jaguars. I think the Saints are going to win this in a blowout going away. The Giants heading out west to play Arizona. The Cardinals finally get a home game, and they get the Giants coming off a big win in Philadelphia. I think the Cardinals can beat the Giants. I'm taking the Cardinals in a letdown for the G-men out west. Falcons, Seahawks. I think the Falcons bounce back, get back to doing what we talked about earlier, despite the 12th man, which is, you know, that big, huge bowl stadium in Seattle. I think the Falcons get back to doing what they do, run the ball and get a win. Now, here's an interesting game. The Patriots heading to Oakland to play the Raiders. The Raiders front seven is big, nasty. And I don't know. I went back and forth on this. I really did. You know what? I'm going to take the Patriots, although I think it's going to be a tough one for them to beat the Raiders in Oakland. Dolphins heading to play the Chargers. I think the Chargers win, and the Finns remain winless. Broncos heading to Green Bay to take on the Packers. I think the Packers roll on this one in Lambeau. Jets heading to Baltimore. I'm taking the Ravens in this. I think Ray Rice and the Ravens, they're going to run the ball, and then they're going to throw it to Ray Rice, and then they're going to run Ray Rice some more, and then they're going to throw it deep to Evans and Anquan Boldin. I think the Ravens are going to have a big, big day, and Mark Sanchez and company are going to struggle. Monday night, you have the Colts heading to Tampa. It doesn't get any better for the Colts. I think they go 0-4. The Buccaneers are tough. And after that effort, you know, last Sunday night, the Colts, credit to their defense for hanging in and really giving Pittsburgh all they really can handle. But I think Tampa Bay is a really, really solid team, maybe better than we thought. So I'm taking the Buccaneers Monday night. A lot of NFL stuff right there. My name is Ryan. This is Unsigned. Thanks for hanging out with me. Now we're going to head off the path. This is where we take a break from sports. We talk about things that are not sports related. First off, I want to talk Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Nominees for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame class of 2012 are in, and they are Guns N' Roses, The Cure, Heart, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, The Spinners, Freddie King and Rufus and Chaka Khan. That's an interesting one. Previous nominees that are still on the ballot that did not get voted in last year are the Beastie Boys and the Red Hot Chili Peppers also make the cut. Top voters will be inducted April 14, 2012 in Cleveland, Ohio, the home of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum. To be elected or nominated on the ballot, you have to have a single or album released before 1986 or obviously earlier, to be on this year's ballot. Many bands like Talking Heads, Cream, Police, Led Zeppelin, and others have put aside longstanding feuds for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony. It was asked by Slash earlier last year in an interview, if Guns N' Roses were inducted, would they get together and play at the induction ceremony? And Slash said in an interview last year, says, well, about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it depends if Axe, Duffy, Izzy, and myself start communicating, anything can happen. Not sure what you're going to take from that. I think it'd be great to see Guns N' Roses come together, even if it's for one night, just for Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ceremony and lay down a couple tracks. I think that would be great to see. Don't know if we're going to get that opportunity. Guess we'll have to wait till April to find out. Now, here's a lot of people may be sad about this, but Mike Mills of REM says it's really celebratory. Describing his conflicting emotions the day after he and guitarist Peter Buck and singer Michael Stipe announced REM was disbanding after 31 years. REM this summer recorded 3 new songs and a 2-CD greatest hit package. REM, Past Lies, Past Heart, Part Truth, Part Garbage, 1982 to 2011, is going to be released November the 15th. REM formed in Athens, Georgia in 1980 with drummer Bill Bury. And issued their very first single, which is called Radio Free Europe. It was originally released in July of 81, that single. REM's 15 studio albums have sold more than 85 million copies worldwide. The band was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2007. Somewhere there's a big-time REM fan somewhere when they heard this news that put on Everybody Hurts on repeat and just sobbed. You know? You know they did. Everybody hurts sometimes. Anyway, moving on tonight here on Off the Path, a giant inflatable pig from Pink Floyd's iconic album Animals flew again Monday in London, almost 35 years after the original cover image was taken in 1976. The cover shot was staged. Why Pink Floyd, the multi-platinum collection of the band's back catalog, introducing remastered versions of hit classics like The Wall, The Ninth Meter, and also others. And obviously the album Animals. Now, Pink Floyd will set out a bunch of remastered copies that actually started yesterday. On September 26th, the legendary psychedelic rock band Pink Floyd again will release remastered six-disc Emerson set, the 1973 album Dark Side of the Moon. In addition to the box set, 14 remastered Pink Floyd albums will be set to be released. November 7th will be Wish You Were Here, which will be released in a five-disc set, along with a single-disc collection of Foot in the Door, The Best of Pink Floyd. And in February, The Wall, February 27th, The Wall will be reissued on a seven-disc, three-CD set. Pink Floyd has sold over 200 million albums worldwide. Unbelievable. Radiohead in news here. Radiohead Tom Yorn said on BBC Radio that the band will tour in 2012. On last Tuesday, Radiohead announced two shows in New York. The band so far has played one live show since releasing their album King of Lambs. The secret show was at the Galston Festival in the UK. This is their eighth studio album, King of Lambs, which debuted in the top 10 in the charts in over 21 different countries, including number 3 in the U.S. and number 7 in the U.K. Yorn also added that he is finishing up work on a new album as part of Atoms for Peace, a side project with popular producer Niall Goodrich, which also features Red Hot Chili Peppers bassist Flea and Beck drummer John Warwick. So look for that to be coming soon. I would guess there's no release date set here for it. But Radiohead looking to do a tour. I know a lot of people will be interested in that. I'm a big fan of Radiohead's older stuff. Some of the newer stuff, I think, you know, it's a little artsy, but they're still very good musicians. I would definitely be interested in seeing them live, no doubt about it. Here's some movie news. Quentin Tarantino has an opening role for a bad guy in his new film that was originally casted for Kevin Costner. He pulled out of his role as he was supposed to play a sadistic henchman for the movie Django Unchained, which Tarantino wrote and is also directing as well. It takes place in the West in the early 1800s. It's a German dentist turned bounty hunter played by Christopher Waltz who buys and frees a slave named Django so the slave can help find his man that he's looking for. Unfortunately, the two become friends and the bounty hunter helps Django rescue his wife and his child as well. Jamie Foxx is going to star in the film as Django. Samuel Jackson and Leonardo DiCaprio also are to star in this film. So a lot of good actors in the film that's set to be released Christmas of 2012. Filming is in progress right now. Speaking of top movies, we do this every week here on Off the Path on Unsigned, the top 10 movies at the box office this week. Number 10, I Don't Know How She Does It at 2 million. The movie Straw Dogs at 2 million as well. The movie The Help still in the top 10 at 4.3 million. The movie Drive, which looks very good, 5.7 million. The movie Contagion, which is also getting very good reviews, 8.4 million. The movie Killer Elite, which is based on a true story, 9.3 million. The movie Abduction, 10.9 million. Dolphin Tale 3D, also based on a true story, 19.1 million. The sports movie, Moneyball, again another movie based on a true story that stars Brad Pitt, 19.5 million. And number one, the re-release of Lion King 3D, 21.9 million. Now, you think with Disney, I would imagine Disney is going to start with re-releasing all these old Disney movies and putting them in 3D just to cash in. I mean, the last 2 weeks, it's been number one at the box office. Wouldn't surprise me if they do. That concludes our section of Off the Path tonight. And we're going to jump right back into the Major League Baseball wild card recap tonight. Tell you what, very compelling. Only a couple games left in the season before we get into the playoffs. The wild card race is hot and heavy. The Boston Red Sox, I tell you what, this team has played awful in the month of September. They really have. In the month of September, the Boston Red Sox are 6-19. That's a 24% winning percentage. And they're clinging to the wild card spot that everyone, including myself, most here like, Yankees and Red Sox are going to be there. Just a matter of who's going to get the wild card. Nah, Tampa Bay has played some solid, solid baseball, and they're right there. They're tied as of tonight. Now, Tampa Bay was beating the Yankees. They're at home tonight. Now, the Red Sox were up against the last place Orioles in Baltimore. I think it was 5-3 last I checked. I'll try to get a score update as we go on tonight. A couple of games left is going to depend on who wants it more, I guess, at this point. The Red Sox, buck up and try to get these last couple wins against really the last place Orioles they should beat. If you're a playoff team and you're trying to get in the playoffs and you're playing the last place team in your division, you have to beat that team to get in. The Tampa Bay Rays playing the Yankees first in their division. It'd be a shame. I'd like to see Tampa Bay get in because I think there'd be a handful in the playoffs. Again, we'll know more here as the weekend approaches when the season closes. Now, the NL, the National League, is in a very similar situation. The Atlanta Braves, who have lost 7 out of their last 10, and it was a lock. I just assumed, last couple weeks we've done the recap, I just assumed, the Braves look good. All of a sudden, they just started losing a bunch of games here in the last couple weeks. Now, the Cardinals are only one game out with about 3 or 4 games left on their schedule, and they're playing the last-place Astros. So the Cardinals could technically overtake the Atlanta Braves, who really had a nice season and have really faltered down the stretch, and take that wild card spot. The thing against that really is a downfall for Atlanta at this point is they play the Philadelphia Phillies, the best team in baseball, the last part of the season, and they're getting beat tonight. It was 6-0, I believe, in the 5th or 6th inning. We can, try to get a score update as we move on tonight. But that's what your Major League Baseball wild card recap looks like. We'll have more for the playoff picture next week. Moving on tonight here on Unsigned, my name is Ryan. Hey, thanks for hanging out with me. I appreciate it. Let's talk some college football. Big, big weekend. As always, college football every week is a big week. Michigan, number 19 in the country right now. They win against San Diego State. Brady Hoke's new head coach at Michigan taking on his old team, San Diego State, 28-7. They did not look good in the second half. They had 3 turnovers in that game, and San Diego could turn those into points. It's a different story. But believe it or not, the Michigan defense actually holds their water and only gives up 7. Credit to them. Georgia Tech is a machine running the triple option. 35 points beating North Carolina, who scored 28. TCU 55 playing Portland State. They only scored 13. TCU really rolling right now. Arkansas versus Alabama. This was what I thought could have been the upset, but Alabama looks the part and really takes it to Arkansas 38-14. Illinois taking on Western Michigan. They squeak out a win 23-20. Oklahoma State comes back and beats Texas A&M 30-29. And Wisconsin, those Badgers, they look tough. They get Nebraska next week. Welcome to the Big Ten, Nebraska. They get to go to Wisconsin for their very first Big Ten conference game. Wisconsin looks very good. 59 points playing South Dakota next week, Nebraska-Wisconsin in Camp Randall. That is going to be a good one. I believe that is a night game as well. How about the Clemson Tigers out of the ACC? They beat Auburn, and then they beat Florida State 35-30. Now 13th in the country. Clemson Tigers look tough. Virginia Tech, another team that's always very good. Frank Beamer's clubs are always tough, play good defense. They beat Marshall 30-10. Baylor, again, just rolling right along 3-0. They play Rice 56-31. South Florida 52, number 16 in the country. UTEP only manages 24 points in that game. South Florida looks very good. Florida playing Kentucky. Now, if this were basketball, it would be a big-time rivalry, but we're not talking basketball. We're talking top 25. Football. Florida destroys Kentucky. This game was over in the first quarter. It was 21-0, 48-10 in favor of Florida. Vanderbilt playing the South Carolina Gamecocks. Not much of a game here. 21-3 Gamecocks beat Vandy. Nebraska, number 8 in the country, playing Wyoming, 38-14. I tell you what, that Nebraska defense better get ready. Wisconsin Badgers are tough. And the new number 1 in college football, and I have to agree, LSU goes to West Virginia and they jump all over the Mountaineers 47-21. They have beat 3 ranked opponents out of their 4 wins. Whew, all on the road, too. Unbelievable. Oklahoma, not necessarily a convincing win against Missouri, 38-28. Boise State playing Tulsa, 41-21 in favor of the Boise State Broncos. Arizona State shocks USC 43-22. That game was close late, and USC just fell apart. and Oregon playing Arizona this past weekend, 56-31 in favor of Oregon. A very solid football club there. Now, here are your rankings as they stand right now. 25 moving up. You have number 25, Arizona State, number 24, Illinois, number 23, Florida State, two losses back-to-back weekends, still clinging in the top 25. West Virginia drops to number 22. Virginia Tech up to 21, TCU at 20. Michigan now at number 19. Arkansas drops to number 18. University of Texas slowly but surely making their way up to number 17. South Florida at number 16. Baylor, number 15. Texas A&M at number 14. Clemson finds himself at number 13. They weren't even ranked a couple weeks ago. The University of Florida at number 12. Virginia Tech at number 11. Number 10, the South Carolina Gamecocks. Oregon Ducks at number 9. Nebraska, number 8. Wisconsin, number 7. Stanford Cardinals of Stan Pat at number 6. Oklahoma State at number 5. Boise State at number 4. Alabama at number 3. And here's the big change. LSU jumping Oklahoma as number 1. I don't have any beef with that. They've beat Oregon. They beat West Virginia. They beat Mississippi State. LSU is the real deal. I'm telling you, this team, it won't shock me if LSU wins the national title. They're my favorite right now. Everyone says Alabama, Alabama, Alabama. I tell you what, LSU, when Alabama and LSU play in November, that's going to be a good one. I think the winner of that probably goes to the national title and plays for it. Other mentions in the top 25, you have Michigan State getting votes, Iowa State getting votes, Ohio State, Kansas State, Penn State, Georgia, Washington and Tennessee, and Notre Dame all getting some votes for the top 25, but not breaking into the top 25. USC somehow got two votes to be in the top 25 after losing. I'm not sure why that is, but again, not in the top 25. That's been your college football top 25 recap here on Unsigned. My name is Ryan. Again, thanks for hanging out with me. I appreciate it. A couple of other stories for you here. Headless mascot. Yes, I did say headless mascot. Ohio minor league team's mascot, they found its head. Its head is no longer missing. The Lake Erie Crushers say the costume head of Stumper the Bear was found at the ballpark this past Thursday. Cleveland's WJWTV reports the smiling bear head wearing the Crushers baseball cap was under the tarp outside All-Pro Freight Stadium in Avon Lake. So they found the head of their mascot. Congratulations, Lake Erie Crushers. The team said that they weren't sure. They had nobody, no suspects at this time. There was no damage to the bear head, but they did find it, and the bear was able to make an appearance at this week's game. Very, very good story there about the mascot finding its head. Now, here's a pot shipment about half-baked Bengals. Let's say that three times fast, right? Police this past Wednesday confiscated a package containing 2.5 pounds of marijuana that was shipped from California to the home of Cincinnati Bengals wide receiver Jerome Simpson in northern Kentucky. Police also found 6 more pounds of pot inside the home, as well as drug paraphernalia, such as packaging materials, scales, and other smoking devices. So here's the math problem for you that I've constructed. If Jerome Simpson has 6 pounds of pot in his home in northern Kentucky, and a package from California is shipped to his home that contains 2.5 pounds of pot, how much pot does Jerome Simpson need for personal use? How many pipes and scales are needed in the package? And how much packaging is needed for distribution? And how many Cincinnati Bengals have been arrested this year? For those keeping track at home, that is 8.5 pounds of pot and a battlefield of pipes that has not been seen since the 1998 film featuring Dave Chappelle, Half-Baked. There you go. That's my pot shipment, half-baked Bengal story of the night. Hey, I want to give a big shout-out to at Morris Bosley Racing, and also a shout-out to at Cooker Carolyn. Check out her cookbook on Twitter, at Cooker Carolyn. And definitely check me out on Twitter as well. That's Ryan underscore unsigned on Twitter. If you have any feedback, you know, definitely reach out to me. Hey, it seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so.